Little what? What is this, Beastie Boys? Yeah, what's up, everybody? It's Frank Fontana and Sherry Fontana sitting in for Bill and Wendy today. Part two of our two-day run here, taking over WGN Radio Studios. Say hello, love.
Hi. Hi, Mr. Fontana.
Hi, Mrs. Fontana. You know, people always wonder on our TV show, Downtown Shabby on A&E, why you call me Fontana?
I just got asked this question yesterday.
And what was your answer?
I don't know. I just randomly said that one day and it stuck.
But you don't call me that at home. You don't run around the house and say, Fontana.
I don't. It's only when
you call me other names.
You know when I got it. You know when I call you Fontana? When you look really cute or do something really funny.
Which, that's great, because then you don't call me that at home, so I'm not cute or funny at home, is what you're saying.
Mostly outside of the home.
It's good. Mm-hmm. It's good. You see what I deal with, people?
Yeah, I'm so terrible.
Yeah. We need like a relationship expert on the show.
Well, that sounds like a good plan. Let's do it today.
Well, hey, what a segue. As a matter of fact, we do have one. Bella Gonde is joining us today. You might hear her on our show on Sundays. She's going to be visiting us today because we don't have issues. But I want to, you know, between you and I, and not the, you know, millions of people listening, I want to start dating you again. And I think we need help with that.
I would agree. I think we need help.
Not
as
because
well.
We don't love each other, but, you know, just finding that right way to approach it. You get comfortable after you've been married for some time, right? And you kind of almost forget how to do it.
I'd never forget how to do it.
Well, then why aren't you doing it?
But I will say it's having kids and responsibility. It sometimes comes first, and our relationship does come last most of the time. And I'd like to change that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that happens with kids and then all the pressure that kids put on and all that.
And just in life in
and
general.
And life and responsibilities. We talk about this all the time. Maybe we talk about it too much.
So I'm thinking, so having Bella Gonde on is amazing for me because I'm all about relationships and romance and psychology
you
and figuring it out.
You are a lost romantic.
I am. So I'm going to try very hard not to talk about our relationship only because I want other people to be able to call in and have their questions. So help me not talk only about our relationship.
I will do that for sure. And
who else do we have on who I'm very, very excited to have?
Dr. John Duffy's joining us. Mm-hmm. He's got his own podcast about, what is it, Undo Anxiety. And he's an expert in the world of anxiety. He's a life coach, parenting relationship expert. You've heard him on the Bill and Wendy show before. He's actually a hometown favorite from where we are from in LaGrange, which is really cool. We were just chit-chatting off mic about our little cute town. DrJohnDuffy.com is the website. I'm excited to have him on the show, Cher. Why am I excited?
Because you think that I will take something away from this today and hope that my anxiety will get under control.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what you don't know is I'm actually paying him to be here. This is a therapy session, and I thought it'd be good if we did it on the air.
Okay. Hopefully it'll help you as well.
I'm hoping so. Mm-hmm. I'm not claiming that I don't have issues. I have a few.
A few.
Yeah. And then we're going to round out the show with Dr. Philip Krause. He's an MD and cardiologist at North Shore University Health System. And you know, I got a couple cardiologist friends, and I was talking to him the other day about, you know, when's their busy season? And guess what he said?
Every day.
No. He said that most of the heart attacks he's dealing with, and this is a cardiologist friend of mine, said it happens right around this time. As soon as it starts to get super cold and it starts to snow. Why?
The cold air affects your heart.
No.
Stress of holiday shopping.
Stress
and money
of holidays
and
shopping.
Overeating.
Potentially. These are you're hitting on contributing factors. But what he said is that sedentary lifestyle, sedentary people who, you know, are all year long aren't doing much. But then the snow falls and they get outside and they start digging away like they're in a CrossFit competition. And they go from 0 to 100, and that is the number one cause of heart attack during this time of year.
That's scary.
It is scary.
Especially because we live in Chicago, and the snow is insane.
And it's inevitable, right, that every year it's going to snow at a certain point. So maybe you should start thinking about a workout program to just shovel snow.
Or maybe the kids of today should get off their butts and help family shovel.
That is definitely an option. So Dr. Philip Krause is going to be joining us to talk about how to avoid that, as well as some other ways to keep the heart healthy You know, it's that time of year. You got to start thinking about those resolutions, right? What's your resolution? We talked a little about it yesterday. What are your resolutions, Sherry?
To get healthy and to...
Healthier or just straight up healthy?
To get healthier and to also work on myself this year, being a better Sherry.
You know, speaking of which, I did, and you started to watch this a little bit, watch this documentary by Anthony Robbins. You know, the famous guru, self-help guru. I've read a ton of his books. Matter of fact, almost all of them. And I just happened to stumble on Netflix this documentary called I Am Not Your Guru. And it's the first ever behind-the-scenes look at Anthony Robbins' Date with Destiny program. It was so compelling and riveting. Because you got to see a side of Anthony Robbins you've never seen before.
Well, unless you see him in action, live like that, you have this preconception of him that he is this guru. But when you actually watch it, because I did watch a little bit of it with you, he's just a raw, real person that gets in there and gets in your face and makes you face what your demons are.
Yeah, I think everybody could use a little dose of Anthony Robbins. And he does it in a way that is like, I mean, he's cussing at people. He's getting in their face. I mean, he made this one lady literally on the spot break up with her boyfriend.
From across the country, right?
Yeah. It's crazy.
So do you want to be my guru?
I can't be your guru, baby. I can't heal you.
I think you kind of were my guru when
I was.
Met.
Yeah. And yeah. That's, well, we'll talk to Dr. Duffy if that's a good idea or not to be somebody's guru. I hear this all the time, is you shouldn't be responsible for somebody else's happiness. But that's so hard when you're in a relationship. I mean, I want to make you happy all the time.
That's so nice. That's very sweet. And I think if you love somebody, you want them to be happy and you want to help contribute to their happiness. And that's fine. I think that's great. I think your life cannot be dedicated to doing that.
No.
But I think moments of making each other happy, I think, are wonderful.
Right. If it brings happiness overall. And you know what? To switch gears a little bit, a lot of people are texting in because yesterday on the show, we led off with this text message debacle where my wife was sent the wrong text. Mm-hmm. Our babysitter had intended, to text somebody else and kind of called out our son as being a brat. On the text, it wasn't the worst text in the world. We just got somebody texting in from the 773. Says, "Hi, my name is Trina. This message is for Miss Fontana. That babysitter is not to be trusted. If she talked about your son, you know that. What else is she saying about your family? Just saying, something to think about."
Thank you. That's supportive. Yeah. But you know,
how did it end? Let's give a button to this so that people listening can know where this ended.
Let's wrap this up. Okay. I got home. We didn't really talk about it, but she sent me a text.
So the babysitter was there. The gal who sent the text was home when we got there. And what happened?
So let's clarify. I got the text, reacted, had to process it because I'm an overreactor. So I had to process it, kind of reason with myself, got home. She apologized, said she had a stressful moment. She had a lot going on at that moment. Our son was needing her. Mm. And the fact of the matter is he probably was very needy and wanted her attention. And she sent a text out and expressed her feelings.
To the wrong person.
To the wrong person.
Ouch.
I still like her. She's an awesome person.
Is
I really
she there today
that.
Babysitting her children?
No.
There you go. That is the end of the story right there. As a matter of fact, we got to take a break. We'll continue the topic, though, you know, of misfire text. Have you ever sent a text that just went to the wrong person? You wish you could take it back. We'd love to continue to hear your stories. 312-981-7200. I'm Frank. This is Sherry. We're filling in for Bill and Wendy, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bill and Wendy Show. I'm Frank. This is Sherry Fontana. We're filling in for Bill and Wendy. You can catch the usual show every Sunday from 1 to 3, the Frank Fontana Show, where it's just not home improvement, it's life improvement. Speaking of which, Dr. John Duffy is joining us live in studio. Hey, Doc.
Hey, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, it's our pleasure and such a great topic. And for those of you who have not heard Dr. John Duffy here with Bill and Wendy, he's a regular on the Today Show. He's been on the Steve Harvey Show a bunch of times, has a book. What's the name of your book?
The Available Parent. It's about parenting teenagers and tween-age kids.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take you back a little bit.
All right.
We're going to take you back to, let's say, age 3 and 5.
Okay. Sounds familiar.
Yeah. Today versus 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
What do you see are the big issues with parenting today versus then?
Yeah. So I've been, handy enough, I've been doing my job about 20 years. And when I was working with parents at the very beginning, There wasn't a whole lot of anxiety. Parenting wasn't such a verb then. We weren't paying attention to it the way we are now. Now I think there's so much pressure to have your kid be the best, be involved in something, be an expert in something, instead of just kind of free playing at 3 and 5. And I'm guessing if I were to take you guys back and ask, what was 3 and 5 like for you? I'm guessing it was free play.
It was open the door, go on the street, hang out with all your friends, play games, play kickball. There was no cell phones, no iPads, no computers to be sitting in front of.
We were free.
We were free. Yeah.
And I cannot contain my excitement to have you here, because I feel like I was born in the wrong time. I should have been born, 100 years ago, because I'm a very traditional parent who believes I didn't go to preschool.
Right.
Now, if you don't go to preschool and you don't know your letters, it's like
your child's
shunned because of it.
Right.
So I'm happy to have you here, because hearing the difference, you're absolutely right. And I think that's not necessarily a great thing that has changed.
I would agree.
So extreme.
Yeah. I think there is a lot of pressure. I think a lot of it is perceived and kind of parentally imposed. And I think it's something we parents kind of do to each other. We create this kind of unspoken, typically, competition, where my kid's already signed up in a Montessori school, or my kid's in preschool, or my kid's already swimming, or my kid knows how to read at 5, and we panic and we think, oh my gosh, my kid's never going to get into,
keep up with the Joneses. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We were not able to keep up. And so if we can quell our anxiety, we can bring back some of what you're hearkening back to, Sherry. Mm-hmm. We can bring back 100 years ago a little bit and allow our kids the birth to play. And there's a pretty easy argument to be made. The kids learn better and, learn a broader spectrum of ways of life if they are allowed a little bit of freedom than if they are channeled by parental anxiety into certain activities. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Pressed into doing certain things at a young age. And that anxiety, our anxiety, gets to our kids really young. I mean,
so it's really about working on us.
It is.
And so let's launch that topic, because it's a deep topic here. What if you're a parent who suffers from anxiety?
Yeah.
And how real is it that you're going to transfer that anxiety onto your kids?
It's likely, but it's not necessary. And the key is self-awareness. So the three things I ask parents to pay attention to are their own fear, their own judgment, and their own egos. So if they can calm their fear and our fears go to these worst case scenarios. Like, I've had parents in my office with kids who are A students that are now B students who are, the parents are panic stricken that, they're going to end up in a box under the L doing heroin,
Yeah.
And judgment is a big thing, because we judge our kids for the music they listen to that is part of their generation, the iPads that they're attached to that is also something they grew up with. They didn't invent these things.
And the parent typically gets it for them.
Yeah, exactly. Of course they do, right? And then our egos are involved, because, in the end, we want the right stickers on the back of our car, right? We want to look like the parents that are happening. And if we can calm those three things, fear, judgment, and ego, then we can really parent from a very centered place. It's hard to do. It's a lot to ask
Doc,
of yourself.
I'm telling you this, right? Before Sherry and I had kids, I'm a big reader. I'm big into spirituality and motivation and all things self-help.
Yeah.
And I've read all of Deepak Chopra's work. And before we had kids, I said, Sherry, we're going to apply, the law of attraction, the secret, the teachings of detachment and Buddhism, all these great things that I learned and filled my brain with. And you know what happened when we had kids? It all went out the window. I have tried, and I go back to it constantly, and I feel, and I guilt myself into God, I know what's better. I know this information. But yet I'm still frustrated with my son.
Right.
When he doesn't want to do something that's so logical and basic, and it's like, just eat the apple. It's in front of you.
Right.
And you get so frustrated. I have problems personally just reminding and applying those things I know.
I love that idea that you worked on all that self-help stuff, that you're very involved in it, and still this
continue
stuff gets
every
you, right?
Day,
so,
yeah.
So you kind of get into the Tao of parenthood before we're parents, and we think, I know exactly what I'm going to do. What we lose sight of is that it's a process, and so on any given day, if your son doesn't eat the apples that you're so frustrated he's not eating, that's not catastrophic. But if you don't see process there, and you see this moment defines who we are as parents and defines what our kids' future looks like, then we start to panic. And then we start, anxiety gets the best of us.
And we do it all the time. Because, Frank, to your point, you are aware of it. So the fact that you're even talking about it and that you're aware of it and that you want to do better is really the only thing that you should focus on. And we do get frustrated and we remind each other. Sometimes our son will, you know, talk back or say something and challenge us. And I'm always of the mindset, well, there's a reason.
Yeah.
He's either tired. He maybe didn't eat enough. It doesn't excuse the behavior, but I think there's always a reason. I think we need to focus on what that is and remind ourselves we're not terrible parents, but they're going to act how they're going to act. And we need to just guide them and help figure out why they're acting like that.
Absolutely, 100%. The other thing to recognize is in a lot of that behavior that seems so aberrant and annoying to us, our strengths, like underneath that stubbornness that might be so frustrating to you, that long-term might serve him really, really well. But in the moment, it's just like, hey, I'm telling you to eat the apples, eat the friggin' apples, you know?
I've been just talking about this, honestly, like my physicality's changed, and I'm like, I'm short of breath a little bit. I'm like tightening. I'm getting into that posturing of like being frustrated. And you know, a lot of texters are sharing their stories as well. Folks, we'd love to hear from you. Eventually, we'll open the phone lines too, so you can ask Dr. Duffy some questions. 312-981-7200. If you're struggling with all of us new parents, with how to cope with, you know, dealing with them, we'd love to help you out and talk to you as well. We do have to take a quick break, and then we'll come back to news, and then Dr. Duffy will be hanging with us until about, I don't know, maybe 2 o'clock. Is that cool with you?
That sounds great to me.
All right, we'll be right back. Oh, I could feel the anxiety building already.
Is it that bad for you? You have that bad anxiety right now?
No, not really. Welcome back to the Bill and Wendy Show. I'm Frank Fontana. This is Sherry Fontana sitting in with me. We're talking to Dr. John Duffy about that very topic, anxiety. And you know what? I want to start there. We talked a little bit about the kid involvement in that, and we could go on for days about it.
Right.
But what is anxiety, and why do we have it?
Yeah. Anxiety is kind of this created worry about what's coming, you know? So people often compare anxiety and depression, and people would say, like, kind of in layman's terms, depression is this concern about what the past, what we've missed. Anxiety is worrying about the future. And it owns so many of us. And there's so many elements of our lives today that drive anxiety. When we're done with this segment, chances are all three of us are going to pick up our phones, right? You know, a decade ago, this wouldn't have happened. But
right.
We're inundated with data, and life moves at this like warp speed. And that just drives anxiety up. Parenting drives anxiety up. I think we're just, as a whole, culturally, we're worried. The 24-hour news cycle drives anxiety up, right? You know, so if you have a television on most of the day, you know, we can find ways to worry about just about anything. Culture provides that for
us
virtually constantly. So we have to provide some antidote for that. We need to have some silence in our lives. We need to work out. We need to, you know, find a way to counterbalance the cultural anxiety that's being kind of foisted upon us, you know?
So do people have a choice? I mean, is anxiety a fight or flight type of thing?
I don't know if you have a choice about whether you initially have anxiety, but anxiety is always manageable. And, you know, I have psychiatrist buddies who would say, oh yeah, well, I'll prescribe you Xanax and it'll be manageable today. My strong bias is to find ways to manage it in your own life. And that really requires one to look inside and outside, to look at, kind of like you talk about on your show, Frank, like look at the landscape of your life. What drives your anxiety? Is your house a mess? You know, is your work life a mess? Are you disorganized? Sure. And what are your thoughts internally? Are you self-deprecating to a point, to a fault? You know, a lot of us carry around this thought like, I'm not good enough, broadly speaking. You know, I'm not thin enough. I'm not working hard enough. I don't make enough money. Simply, I'm not a good enough parent. And as long as we carry those messages, our anxiety level goes up through the roof, because we believe we're not competent and we're not resilient to what's going on in our world. And those are anxiety creators immediately.
Yeah. And then we'll open up the phone lines too. If you want to ask Dr. Duffy some questions of your own, what's going on in your life, 312-981-7200.
Well, and definitely I think what happens is when you do suffer from anxiety, you end up being able to function better in an anxious state. And not being anxious is uncomfortable. So you're always looking for the next thing to solve, the next thing to do. I definitely have anxiety. I have from a child.
Right.
And throughout my life, it's been more manageable.
Yeah.
But having children has sent it through the roof, for sure. But I know I have it. That's the first step. And I
right.
think that some people don't realize it. So I think, like you said, knowing that you have it, dealing with it, facing it, figuring it out. But a lot of times, Frank and I will get into this because he's not an anxious person at all.
Right.
We're complete opposites. I mean, when we met, I was like sitting on a rock meditating, you know, I was next to Buddha, I would like to say to myself, you know.
he pretty much was, and I was.
Opposites do attract.
Exactly. Yeah. I was going to say, yeah. And I guess I needed this in my life.
Right.
And
you know?
So I definitely challenged him to the end degree, but he would say things to me, and he still does, but it's less, you know, just think about it differently.
Right.
Or just, you know. Think about something else, and it's, unless you suffer from anxiety, you have no idea how hard it is. It's not possible to do that.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we
at that very moment, it's not possible to just turn it on and off. But you can work on things and coping mechanisms and triggers and things that you can use. But when you're at a heightened state, that's not the time to work on it at that very moment, I feel like.
I agree with that. When you're already there, when you're already at that heightened state where you're maybe just short of like that panic kind of anxiety, I think that's a real tough time to try to talk yourself through it and reason with yourself. Because usually our anxiety has a catastrophic element to it. You know what I mean? And if you're already catastrophizing and considering your worst case scenarios and you're deep into that and your heart's already racing and your palms are sweaty, it's real tough to kind of recoil from that. Usually you just have to let that be for 15 or 20 minutes. And if you can sweat a little bit, exercise a little bit, do something different, then you can get to it. I like to manage anxiety at the times when you don't feel like you're in any kind of crisis and find a way to find a calm center, you know what I mean? And a mantra maybe that works for you that you can call upon when you feel the aura of that anxiety, that big anxiety mm-hmm. kicking in, you know what I mean? Because if you don't have something like that to lean on, then the anxiety owns you, right?
Right.
And it can take over anytime. Anxiety has its own mind and it will take you over at random.
Well, I guess it completely makes sense. Once you can master what that is for you that actually gets you centered,
mm-hmm.
practicing that often enough will help in those moments, hopefully, to bring you out of that place.
That's therapy right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is exactly the plan.
Well, all right. So does this go back, like many, many people do and many, many doctors say, it started in childhood?
Of course.
Are all of these things really anchored in childhood? And is it true that from the age of 1 to 6 are the most impressionable years of a child's life?
No doubt. No doubt this stuff is anchored and rooted in childhood. It shapeshifts over time. And so, you know, what your concerns are when you're 5 are not necessarily your concerns at 35. But in terms of the insecurities that drive anxiety, yes, that stuff is foisted upon us early on. And I'm not much for blaming anybody. I don't think you need to have a fall guy. I don't think you need to say my parents did me wrong or anything like that. But I think it's important to have the self-awareness to recognize, yeah, that's when it started. Mm-hmm. And these are the words that I kind of repeat to myself in my head that drive my anxiety. And if I can replace those with something a little more adaptive, then I'm going to be less anxious more of the time. Mm-hmm. And the anxiety I have, I can work with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What were you going to say, Sharon?
I can talk about this for the rest of my life.
I'm sure, and maybe you should.
With your help.
Definitely. Dr. John Duffy's joining us. He'll be here. We're opening up the phone lines, 312-981-7200. If you got a question on the topic of anxiety and as it relates to parents and parenting, your children, that's definitely something you and I are dealing with at the moment, with 2 young kids and the expectations that come along with that, Doc, of, we mentioned co-parenting and Sherry's a big believer in what is it, attachment parenting?
Yeah, you call it that, which I know there's a big philosophy out there on
right.
attachment parenting. And for some reason look at me and label it as attachment parenting, which is completely fine. I don't think
it's a negative thing.
No, I don't either.
I think it's a good thing.
But I think 2 things. I think one, I think it's our responsibility as good parents to give children what they need to succeed in life. And you know, that old school belief of, you're fine, you're tough, get up, you know, you don't have to, you don't need attention, or, you know, you just fell, be tough. Like, when I hear that, and it's something that I have to work in, because I am judging when I do hear that.
Right.
But I'm like, no, you're not tough at three.
Right.
You need your mother or father's love and security.
Yeah.
To make you understand why it's okay, and to make you get past certain things. But, and also the other thing I want to talk about was, you touched upon, you know, having society right now so busy and so much responsibility, and that's part of the reason. You know, and sometimes it happens for me. I'll hear someone say, "Oh, my daughter just came back from dance and something else." And I'm a victim of it. I'll come home and think, "I have to sign him up for karate."
Right.
He doesn't do anything.
Right, right, right. He needs a resume.
Yeah,
exactly.
But that creates it, for sure.
Well, let's hop on the calls. We have some calls coming in. If you want to talk with Dr. Duffy, myself, and Sherry, we'd love to hear your stories on maybe helping your anxiety. Now, we don't hear exactly, you know, the downsides of it. But let's talk to Bob. Hey, Bob.
Doing?
I'm doing well. What's going on, buddy? Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you all. I was just listening and doing some Christmas errands. And I just wanted to call in and compliment the doctor and just say I think he's absolutely spot on. I'm a professor of psychology at a local community college, and I teach child development and lifespan development, and I am just sitting enjoying the conversation and saying yes.
Thank you, Bob. Yes. We appreciate that. That's awesome. And be safe out there with your holiday shopping. Don't get anxiety, all right?
Not at all. I'm pretty calm.
All right, Bob. Thanks for the call. We appreciate
that's
it.
A great one.
All right. Let's grab Michelle. Hey, Michelle. Thanks for calling the show.
Hi. I watch you guys on FYI.
Well, thank you.
I love the show, and I'm glad you're on this afternoon. But anyway, about anxiety, I've got kind of a weird, I think it's a weird situation. My mother's 87 years old, always leaned towards anorexia. This fall went through a huge bout of anxiety, wouldn't get out. She's very active, 87-year-old, wouldn't get out of bed, wouldn't eat, lost 30 pounds. We finally got her on a medication and started her in therapy, but of course, she doesn't need therapy. So we had to kind of give up, but I don't know. You know, I'm a big believer in therapy, obviously, but if the doctor has any advice on trying to get her back in, you know, an uncooperative person.
I'm sure he does. This is what we're going to do, Michelle. We're going to keep you on hold. We got to take a quick commercial break, and you're going to be the first person we talk to as soon as we come back. Is that cool with you?
Okay.
All right.
That's great.
Stand
by.
Welcome back to the Bill and Wendy Show. I'm Frank Fontana. This is Sherry Fontana. We're talking to Dr. John Duffy about parenting, anxiety, and all that comes with it. And we're taking your phone call, 312-981-7200, on the topic. And we're going to pick back up with Michelle. Hey, Michelle, let's continue your story. For the quick recap, you have an 87-year-old mother who is having issues going into... Why don't you give us the quick recap, and Dr. Duffy will take it from there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, she's always been anorexic, you know, when she had a problem. And then this fall, she decided she wouldn't get out of bed. She wouldn't eat. I mean, and she would not eat. She lost, like, 30 pounds, and she's already thin. Mm-hmm. And we finally got her turned around. Her internist put her on Lexapro and sometimes Ativan, and we finally got it stabilized now, and she's fine, but we can't keep her in therapy because, of course, nothing's wrong with her. She just wasn't hungry for 3 months. I don't know. Is there any way to get her back? Because there's, you know, I think it helps.
Yeah, well, no doubt, Michelle. I think you're right about that. And first of all, it must be very difficult for you to be her daughter, to want the best for her and to not be able to, you know, get her the help that you kind of know, I can tell, that she needs. And what I would suggest is, you know, keeping in mind that she's 87. So there's a generational issue here. And her generation, in all likelihood, has a lot of resistance naturally to therapy. It might imply a certain weakness. There's a stigma affiliated with it that she might carry. And so I think the more, if you can get her talking about like what that resistance is about for her, And what treatment would mean to her and your feelings about it. If you could share it on kind of a feelings level as opposed to, mom, this is what you need to do level. My mother is not far from that age. And if I told her you're going to therapy, I think her instinct would be, nope, I'm not doing it. So the more you kind of collaborate with her on this and make it a project that you're working on together in terms of finding her wellness, I think that's going to drive some better results maybe than trying to impose therapy on her, because that doesn't really work for anybody, whether they're 17 or 87.
Right. We backed off because it wasn't going anywhere. But, it's the behavior's under control, but,
Yeah, it sounds like a topic that probably needs a little further discussion. I mean, and Dr. Duffy, you're available for these kind of consults,
absolutely,
right? How can people get a hold of you?
Sure. You can write me, Michelle, on my website, johngduffy@drjohnduffy.com, and I can give you a little more information about what you might do to help to get your mom back in therapy.
Thank you, Michelle. Have a happy holiday.
Thank you. Bye.
And thanks for watching. We appreciate it. All right, let's talk to a little bit more serious of a situation here. Greg has a daughter who's going off the deep end over worrying about her daughter. Hey, Greg, thanks for calling the show.
Hi.
Hey, Greg.
Yes.
Talk to us. Tell us what's going on.
Well, she had open heart surgery when she was born, my granddaughter.
Okay.
That was almost 4 years ago. But she's been fine. I mean, she's great, playful, very happy child. And this year, ever since July, she's had like 6 or 7 colds right in a row. And not that my daughter's being overprotective, but she's worrying so much that there's more of a problem. And just recently they found out that the machine that they use for the bypass can cause a bacteria that stays dormant for a while and then all of a sudden shows up and get bad enough to where, the kid could die. And it's like she's seeing things that might not be there. I'm not absolutely positive of that, but, she's called me a few times and said, Dad, I don't know what to do. I can't take it anymore. She's falling apart, and I honestly don't know what to do for it.
Greg, hopefully Dr. John Duffy can help with some suggestions, and it sounds like, again, it might be a deeper conversation, but just touching the surface, Doc, what would you say?
Yeah, Greg, we've been talking a lot about like undue, unnecessary anxiety here. Your daughter has some things to truly be anxious about. We can only imagine what it's like to go through what she's going through, some of the fears she has for her own daughter's health, and I'm sure you feel that as her grandfather sometimes. And so what my immediate suggestion is that I wouldn't expect anybody to go through what your daughter's going through without talking to a qualified therapist who's dealt with things like this before. So if I have one suggestion for you, it would be this could be your Christmas gift to her, is to encourage her to seek out therapy for herself, just to work through all of her emotions around this and all of her fears around her daughter's health. Because I can imagine that when your daughter's been through open heart surgeries and medical procedures, that a cold becomes, even if it's irrational, becomes a scary thing. And so she definitely needs help finding kind of grounding for all of that. So the best way I know to do that is through a good qualified therapist.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Greg. And we wish you the best of luck and the best of health for your granddaughter, and a happy holiday.
Thank you. Same to you.
You got it, Greg. Thank you so much. Let's take one more call here. We have Jim, who says his wife just started getting anxiety. Hey, Jim, thanks for calling the show.
Hey, how are you guys?
Doing well, Jim. Thanks.
So I just started listening, and I heard you guys were talking about anxiety, and this just came up in my family with my wife about a year ago. So I wanted to call because we're having a real hard time dealing with it.
Well, walk us through some scenarios.
So it appears that this just kind of happened overnight, and the situation is we were on a plane visiting a friend in New York, and this anxiety just overcame her just out of nowhere. And, I kind of saw what anyone would do, just like take a couple deep breaths, she loves her nephew. So I was like, let's look at pictures of her nephew. And it kind of got her centered, like you guys were talking. But it came right back, this rush. Make a long story short, she saw a psychiatrist, but nothing went further. And the diagnosis they gave us was, you know, it came on so suddenly, and we really can't find a trigger. You know, it's probably going to fade away so suddenly. So that's what she held on to, and she's not really putting any more efforts into trying to get rid of it. But now it's progressed into driving on the highway, just like fast speeds, and I really don't know what to do about it.
Doc, what say you?
Yeah, you know, Jim, anxiety works like this frequently, especially when it's kind of like not chronic, but kind of acute, like what you're describing, these kind of like sudden bursts of anxiety. And they show up at funky times in life. And sometimes we try to attach it to a certain situation, like, you know, maybe it has to do with the airplane or maybe it has to do with the road. I promise you it doesn't. And so she needs to work this through, almost like what we were talking about with Greg a minute ago. If she works this through with a psychologist who is really an anxiety expert, and you can write me on my website, and I've got some names of some people who work specifically with this type of anxiety. This is actually, as frightening as it is and out of control as it feels, far more manageable than you might think. So I don't want you to lose any hope whatsoever about this. And it's just a signal that there's something in her life that she probably feels a little out of control about and needs to change.
Good stuff. Jim, I hope that helps a little bit. I wish you a happy holidays and good luck with this all.
You as well.
Be patient, man. I know it's tough. Just be patient.
All right, perfect. Well, thank you, guys.
All right, thanks. Doc, this has been a blast. Unfortunately, we have to go take a break here. We got to have you back on.
I would love that.
Good stuff. I think we could do a whole 2 hours on this topic.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Dr. John Duffy, your website?
DrJohnDuffy.com is my website.
There you go.
Yes.
All right, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bill and Wendy Show. I'm Frank Fontana. You usually hear me on Sundays from 1 to 3, but here we're hanging out, replacing Bill and Wendy today because they're off doing holiday stuff. Kevin's still here, though, right, Kev?
I'm hanging out.
You're hanging out. My wife, Sherry's here co-hosting with me. She's hanging out.
I'm hanging out. I can't see you, though.
I purposely have the screen like
that
this.
That computer screen is in the way, and I have to see you when you talk.
Here we go. Is that better, honey?
Much better.
Okay, because you say you only like me when we're out of the house, so...
So and we're out of the house, so I have to be able to see you to like you.
Yeah, that's why we brought you here, Belagandi, because we need relationship advice.
Can you tell?
Let's just jump right in.
Yeah, Belagandi is the founder and president of Smart Dating Academy. You've heard her on my show on Sundays a bunch of times. You've seen her on the Today Show, on the Steve Harvey Show, and many other national TV platforms. Bella, welcome to the show. What is Smart Dating Academy?
So Smart Dating Academy is a date coaching service. So we do things differently. We're not like old school Yentas, and we're certainly not an online dating app or a site, but we teach people how to actually pick partners that make them happy and then figure out the pipelines to meet these people, like online dating, meeting people in real life, getting your friends to set you up. So we're like personal trainers for people's love lives.
And how does that go? Does that work out for you?
Yeah, so far so good. I go to a lot of weddings. I get a lot of baby announcements.
I love that you said yenta. I love that word.
Yenta.
It's one of my favorite words.
Matchmaker.
Yeah. That's great. So how does one, you know, like, all right, this is the time of year where, you know, a lot of people are lonely and people are thinking, how do I sign up? You know, what do I do? Where do I find that, you know, that romantic holiday dream? How does it work?
So what's going on right now, guys, is if you're out there and if you're thinking about finding love, this is the time of year to do it. There is no better time. This is when the fish are coming to sea, okay, because it's cold, it's dark. 43% of the adult population is single. In this country, there are 107 million single adults per the U.S. Census, right?
You're kidding.
So an astounding. It's almost one in two adults.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Right,
does that account for like divorcees and all that, or is that pre-marriage singles?
No, this is just singles, period. It's singles, but what that doesn't account for are the 10 to 15% of couples that are permanently separated.
Oh.
So that number, I think it's more like one in two adults in this country are singles. So now you've got 43% single. You've got New Year's coming around the corner, people making resolutions. Mm-hmm. So almost one in two adults is saying, hey, I want to maybe dip my toe back in the dating pool. I want to find love. I might want to get married. So this is one that Phish, like I said, they're coming to see. Match's membership goes up 60% from December 15th to February 15th. So if you're thinking about it, do it now.
Wow. So do you think it's because it's all about family during the holidays and you see these romantic like commercials and people just are feeling lonely?
And, yeah.
There's a lot of that. The days are shorter, they're darker, they're colder in Chicago, right? In the summer, we're distracted, we're outside, we're hanging out at art fairs. So here, you get home at, 4:59 p.m. and it's pitch black. So what are you going to do? Take out your Tinder and start swiping.
Right. And so you mentioned the analogy of, the fish are coming, So what's the best bait if I'm a fisherman?
Get yourself out there. You got to have good photos. You've got to have a good profile. You have to have a dating plan. You just can't kind of go, okay, well, I'm going to do this and do that, and in 5 minutes throw myself up on a site or app and then expect the fish to come to your bait. You really have to think about what site, what apps, how many, what your pictures look like. So there's a lot that goes into this.
Well, and it sounds like this is what separates the Smart Dating Academy from others because, okay, it's winter. Like you said, days are shorter, it's cold, you want to meet somebody, but if it's not the right person, summer will come around and that fever's gone and you want to be single again and go out and, meet someone else.
Do it all over again.
What are you saying? Sure, like short-term holiday hookups are acceptable?
Not for me, but for some
people. We're done. You and I are off the market.
You're permanently hooked
100%.
There is no fishing in this
pond.
But
I like that philosophy. So it's not only, okay, here, just go out and meet this person. Let's talk about what you want in a person and then try to match that person up with the same type of person and where will you meet these people. And so it's different from your normal just, oh, I like your photo, I want to meet you.
That's a great point. The analogy I used to go back to the fish metaphor, which seems to be predominant today.
I like it, yeah.
It's kind of, if you've got the give a man to fish and he eats for a meal, but teach a man to fish and he can eat for a lifetime. So we're teaching people how to fish. If you're just going online doing the same thing over and over again, you're probably on that dating merry-go-round. You hook up with someone, it's awesome for 2 weeks, 2 months, 4 months, and then bam, it crashes and burns and you're doing the same thing over and over. So we stop the music and really kind of poke the needle in a good way and say, okay, what have you been doing and why isn't it working for you?
Right.
So who's actually a partner that's going to make you happy for the next 50 to 60 years of your life?
It reminds me of that story of the two cows sitting on top of the mountain. And there's a herd of female cows at the bottom of the mountain. And the younger cow says to the other cow, Dad, let's go there and date all of them. And let's run and get down there. And then there's the dad gets, no, let's just walk down and find one. Is that hold true? I mean, is it about mass and quantity or is it about quality?
It's about both. So what I tell our clients at Smart Dating Academy is when you're thinking of getting back out there, you got to think about dating in the beginning like you would a horse race, right? So in order for anything to be a race, you got to have multiple horses in there. Because once that gun goes off and those horses start at the line, the horse that looks like it's winning in lap one may break its leg. It may have to be taken out back. And, so,
or she's crazy.
Right, exactly. Right. The crazy people cannot keep the crazy in the closet for more than 15
Speaking
minutes.
Speaking of which, have you seen this crazy, cool Matrix video online?
It's hilarious. The crazy
Matrix. Yes. Kev, have you seen this? You would appreciate this, Kevin.
I think you introduced
this. Didn't I introduce
it?
What, yeah. Isn't it's it awesome. Brilliant?
It's brilliant. It really is. It's fascinating. And it's true.
And what is your take on this? And folks, you could Google this right now. Crazy Cool Matrix. First Google Smart Dating Academy, then Crazy Cool Matrix. Am I saying it? Crazy Hot Matrix.
It's a hot, crazy matrix. What I don't agree with is that all women start out at a 4 crazy. So we'd have to come back and talk about that because I think men have that crazy as well.
Of course,
so.
But more women
right,
do.
Right, right, right. But it is super funny. Go to YouTube. Check it out. It's like these two ex-military dudes talking about how women look for men and how men look for women. It's so funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yes, I know I butchered the cow joke because it's way dirtier than I made it to be. So
it got us off the fish.
It did.
So
I
we
was
went
trying
from
to,
one a reptile
right,
or
to a bovine.
To a mammal. So, yeah.
But all joking aside, because I always thought that, and I'm going to leave this as our cliffhanger question because we're going to have to take a break. But has online dating become bigger than real world dating? Don't answer that. We have to take a quick break. Welcome back to the Bill and Wendy Show. I'm Frank Fontana. This is Sherry Fontana. And we're being joined by Bella Gandhi from Smart Dating Academy. And Bella was just telling me that it seems like nowadays that traditional ways of meeting people are thrown out of the window and it's been replaced basically by technology. There's no more days of going to the bar and hooking up, huh?
You can still go to the bar and hook up. What the way I look at technology is, thank God it's there, right? So you can still go to the bar and hook up, and you've got this pipeline to all these other people that you would never have met 25 years ago if it weren't for online dating. So the good news is you can go to the bar down the street, but you don't have to settle for who's in the bar. You can see who's on your apps and sites as well.
Is the stigma gone? Like, you know, it used to be like, oh, online dating, ooh, you're not cool, you can't meet people. Like that whole, like, remember when it first started, like, that was the thing. It was like, man, oh my God, they met online, that's weird.
Right. Let's just tell everyone we met in Paris.
Right.
So there was,
so now is it cool to meet online? Is that the new thing?
It's not even cool to meet online. It's just normal, right? It's like putting a shirt on, like putting your pants on in the morning. It's like, I met someone on Tinder. Okay, awesome, I met someone on Match. Like, it's very normal at this point.
So it's not normal for us. Because before Frank and I got married and we were single, at least for myself...
You stalked me. It was pretty much what happened.
That is so not the truth. I'm sure you believe him at all. If you want to hear the real story, I will tell you. But so for me, online dating is something very, you know, foreign. But also, so immediately I think of, okay, you meet someone, you go on a date, and with all the social media now... What if you post a picture? It's like, oh,
you know,
this
too
is my
much
day.
About them almost.
Well, and then if you're dating someone else, you know, that horse is the horse you're talking about. What if someone sees the photo of you? And I feel like it could start this whole like fiasco, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Like when people are dating, I tell them stay off of social media. Don't change your relationship status every other week. Single, in a relationship. Just don't do that. Keep it off of social media, because you're right. While social media can have great advantages, like we all know, in every aspect of our lives, there's certainly an underbelly. And so people can definitely watch what we do on social media. And if someone friends you too quickly on Facebook when you've just started dating, you don't have to accept their friend request.
Yeah, but now
like,
you get into weird territory,
stalking.
Right?
Like, yeah,
no, but seriously, like if Sarah and I just started meeting and she and we're dating and we kind of like each other and she requests me on Facebook and I don't, you know, like respond, aren't I a jerk? Like, aren't I like, are you ignoring me? Like, you just made out with me.
Or like, you're definitely going to go through all my photos and think, okay, let's see what she's been doing, who she knows. And oh, back, you know, 6 months ago, there was this other guy that, you know, she was posting pictures with. So I think you got to be careful.
You have to be super careful. So if she requests you on Facebook and you don't want to, then just say, you know what? I'm not really active on Facebook. So you know what? Why don't we just stay in touch via text and in person instead of you crawling through my last 4 years of photos? And what we want to do, what our brains want to do, is we want to make sense of the person in front of us. So we start trolling down these rabbit trails of photos from 3, 4, 5 years ago and trying to draw conclusions like, oh, wow, I think she's actually an alcoholic. You know what? Every picture of her is her in a bar. Forget it. Game over. So that's
fair.
When I'm like, just stay off of social media with people that you're dating.
That's like telling a crack addict to not have crack if it's sitting in front of them. You know, it's like people these days are addicted to social media. How do you not?
But you can't be sneaky. If you're on social media dating, there is no way to be sneaky unless you completely just get off of it and only go to your site. So...
Well, exactly. Right. Go to smartdatingacademy.com. Then you'll be safe. But, you know, I tell everyone, if you're going to Google someone, that's fine. Just have that information in your brain. But then on a second date, don't be like, well, you know, you told me that you were living in New York, but your Google, when I Googled you, it actually said that you most recently came from Iowa. Like, don't do things that are going to make you look weird and like a stalker.
How about these sites that are straight up about hooking up?
Like, how about them?
How about them? God bless.
Sugardaddies.com. There's something for everybody online. Right?
Yeah, right?
Right. But the number one Googled word online is sex.
How do you know
and
about
then
those
free.
Things?
I know nothing about nothing. Hmm. What is this thing you call sex?
Dun, dun. Dun, dun.
It's funny. Yeah. It's funny. Speaking of which, you know, you talked about, like, you know, what the best bait was. And it's pretty funny. A texter from the 773 is, can't let you get away with this one, but the best bait is a big worm. What do you say about that?
Just keep your worm out of your photos.
Keep your worm out of your Facebook profile, and you'll meet a quality woman. How about that? All right, let's shift gears a little bit here before we get in trouble. What do you think about dating your wife? Like, do you apply the same methods you teach in your programs, you know, for newbies as you do with couples who've been together long, and you're like, all right, you guys are kind of losing here. How often do you get those requests?
Well, I certainly wouldn't tell you guys, for example, dating is a horse race at this point, right? So, no, but you definitely need to make time for each other, right? And spend that time away from the kids, away from work. And it all you need is an hour and a half. It doesn't have to be an epic 8-hour date, although those are great. But you have to have that mindful time and keep negative topics off the table. If work is stressing you out, if the kids are stressing you out, you have to choose and be mindful to have positive conversations. Talk about things that are intellectually stimulating, that you're looking forward to doing. Talk about, you know, what you guys want to do together for the next 50 years, but have those fun conversations that brought you together in the first place.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, it's easier said than done.
Yeah.
Because you got all these challenges in life that you got to kind of remove.
We're getting better at it, though.
We are.
There was definitely a point in time where we were doing nothing but focusing on the kids, and then shooting this TV show over the summer. There wasn't time for anything else.
I know.
So now that it's a little bit slower for us, we're appreciating our time more.
Reconnecting.
You know? And the love is definitely there.
Aw, I feel the love. If you guys can see it in here, there's hearts and rainbows and unicorns floating around the studio right now.
So sweet. Oh,
I love it. But yeah, it requires presence and mindfulness because it's a slippery slope. I mean, human beings have a negativity bias in their minds, right? So we're going to start to look for what's not right and then start to fantasize about what is right with someone else. That is your slippery slope. Fix it. Don't be the cow standing on top of the mountain looking down at your spouse.
Right? I was with somebody I forgot who it was telling me this story, and it was about a successful business guy who had the perfect life, married a beautiful woman, a little bit younger than him, has a sports car, has a great successful business, and had a midlife crisis in his 50s. And he broke up with his wife, bought another house, started over, got himself even a younger girl, and when asked why, he said it's evolution. He said, you know, back, you know, whatever, 60, 70 years ago, people were only living till their 50s. So he feels that he lived his first life already and felt that it was in his, his loins to reset and then move forward and start anew. Is that even remotely acceptable?
We should give him Dr. John Duffy.
Yeah, I think so. But in general, though, like these second... You know, when people, where I'm going with this is divorce. You know, people get married really young. Right. They're together until, you know, for 30 years at 50 years old. Is it okay at any point to say, listen, hey, we ran our course. You know, I love you, but I think I want to. We've outgrown each other. I want to date.
Yeah, I mean, our biggest segment of daters at Smart Dating Academy are singles over 50. Almost two-thirds of people have been married for 20, 30 years. They've raised their kids, but they have let their relationship erode over the course of 1 to 2 decades. And they've become roommates. And once the kids are out, they're like, okay, game over. And is it usually amicable? Not so much. It's usually instigated by one person. I'm not going to say it's always the man, but you know, it can be the woman, it can be the man. But again, what we're talking about is prevention here and not getting yourself to that point. So if you do date your spouse and you're mindful about looking out for the good things, telling each other 3 nice things a day and keeping that love alive, because the natural thing is that that flame can start to extinguish. It takes work. I'm not saying a sick amount of hard work, but on a daily basis, you should be doing something.
We have some text coming into what's the age of your oldest client? One is asking.
78.
And then another, what is the acceptable for maintaining a good relationship amount of loving a couple should do together?
Meaning what kind of, like... Yeah, well, you know what? That's I've heard all sorts of numbers across the board on that. It just depends on what both people want and find acceptable. But the most important thing is it's what's acceptable to both of you. You have to come to a conclusion about this. You can't say, well, I want to have sex every day, but I've just never told my wife that. And she thinks having sex once a week is enough. These are things that you have to communicate on. And possibly, as we all know, you're married, you have kids, we've got demands on our time. It may be something that you need to schedule and talk about. Like, these are important things, but I'll tell you what, talk to more people than not. If they're not talking about it, they're not telling you the truth.
Yeah. So
that's put it in the calendar.
That's a good point.
So because I am a hopeless romantic, that's hard for me to have to schedule that time.
Put it in the Google Calendar.
I'll start scheduling.
It'll pop up an alert.
Right. If it's not happening as much as you want it, then you better put it on each other's calendars. Or, I've heard lots of stories about people that have made it work.
That's
sometimes
crazy.
They both come home during lunchtime. Kids are gone. You just say it's one day a week and you text each other, hey, you doing anything for lunch today? And that's how it goes. So it doesn't have to be super scheduled a month in advance, but do what works for you, but talk about it.
Not for the whole year. Okay.
Yeah,
good stuff.
Exactly.
Bella Gandhi, Smart Dating Academy. Where can people find you?
SmartDatingAcademy.com. You can follow us on Instagram at Smart Dating Academy or Facebook at Smart Dating Academy also.
Thank you so much for coming
Thank
in.
Thank you.
Have a great holiday.
You too.
All right. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bill and Wendy Show. I'm not Bill, and my wife isn't Wendy, although we love Bill and Wendy.
We do.
That's Sherry. I'm Frank. Welcome back to the show. We're here till 3 o'clock. Anna and Roe coming on after that. And this will be it for us. I'm not here this Sunday. I usually have a show 1 to 3, and I'm off for the holiday, babe. We're doing... You're killing it this season. We're hosting Christmas Eve and Christmas Day.
And potentially New Year's Eve.
Are we insane?
But I love it. I do love it.
You're going to give me a heart attack. You know that, right?
A lot of work. Don't say that. A lot of work. A lot of planning, but it will be fun. It's easier with the kids.
So yeah. I say heart attack because I was trying to do a nice little segue.
Yeah,
but
no joking about heart attacks.
No joke. Yeah. And speaking of which, your dad recently, went through this whole, traumatic experience while he was riding one of those horse competitions, right?
Yeah. He was riding his horse and didn't feel well, but I don't think it was anything awful that he felt, but he felt something... different for him. And long story short, he was able to get into the hospital and get treated, within, 20 to 30 minutes, which is unheard of. But it's been a long road, and I'm proud of what he's done with the change after this took place. I think that's really important.
It really is. And, this is the time of year where the increase in heart-related issues are being seen in hospitals across Chicagoland. Joining us is cardiologist Dr. Philip Krause. Hey, Doc, how are you?
How are you this afternoon?
Doing well. Thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. Now, we understand this is a really dangerous time of year, right?
There's no question. Heart attack, as you say, is no joke. Coronary heart disease or artery blockage can cause blood flow diminished to our heart. And if the heart is starved for oxygen, people can classically get chest discomfort, known as angina. And some people, as you mentioned before, may just feel a little bit different than usual.
Yeah, Sherry's dad just went through this, she was saying earlier, and he's a pretty tough guy, and he rides horses and, pretty good shape and very active. How old is he? He's like 69, maybe?
20,
yeah. If he's listening, he's 25.
But late 60s, but didn't eat very well, throughout his life, but was always very active. But since then has changed everything, and he's definitely more healthy than he was, before he got sick.
And do you find that a lot,
Certainly.
Doc?
We do. Certainly, heart disease, heart attacks can take down the biggest and the toughest.
Yeah.
Certainly the great equalizer. So people do get that wake-up call if they're smart. So the thing to remember, certainly around this time of season, is the winter, the cold, and the snow all combine to cause an increased risk. So it's not just the exercise of shoveling, the exercise of walking through snowdrifts, but getting outside in the cold can cause changes in the body that are dangerous and can increase the risk of heart attack.
And what do you recommend, like a warm up? If I'm at risk and say I'm a slightly obese, I'm pretty sedentary. Do you recommend a physical warm up before I actually go out and shovel or walk through the snow?
I think the greatest warm up really depends on your age and your condition. So decreased conditioning is one of the biggest risks. If someone is not used to activity, then going out and shoveling a driveway or a sidewalk full of snow is very high intensity exercise. And if you're not used to it, that could be your biggest risk. So I think the best warm-up that you mentioned is really to get into your internist, depending on your age and the last time you saw the internist, doctor, or cardiologist, and get a full physical as well as your evaluation of risk factors, coronary risk factors.
Then
we should probably talk about the signs of heart attack as well.
Definitely. And is there a certain age where you recommend somebody getting started on that? Like for me, there's heart disease in my family. My father had a 6 bypass surgery. My uncle has an aneurysm. My other uncle, it's all over my family. And I don't know if it's hereditary or it's the way they ate. But is there a certain age where you recommend, hey, you should get in there and just start getting tested?
Family history is the most important risk factor for coronary artery disease or heart attack, and we typically recommend that male age over 45 and females after menopause get evaluated significantly for evaluation of family history.
Yeah.
Make sure that your blood pressure is under control, diabetes, cholesterol, and make sure that those people who are smoking definitely stop smoking at that time.
Now, and because medical marijuana has become so popular, does that fall under the category of smoking and risk as well?
It does, though there's not tar and nicotine classically in the street drug. Smoking marijuana and doing any illegal substance increases your risk for heart attack. We've had patients who, even lower than that age, of course, younger people who have taken cocaine in various formats and various routes have ended up with potentially fatal heart attacks because of the constriction of the blood vessels can be deadly.
Interesting. And now, to the contrary, I read that an occasional bout of alcohol isn't such a bad thing in the form of some wine. Is that true?
There is some data to show that a glass of red wine occasionally can be protective because of the flavonoids in the grapes. However, if my patients have not had alcohol intake, we don't recommend starting it.
Got it. Okay.
We also suggest that they should avoid alcohol in the cold weather, because drinking alcohol before going outside to shovel can give you a false sense of security and warmth when you're actually being exposed to the cold.
Like beer muscles almost?
Yes, exactly. That's the term.
You're going to go out there and lift some heavy snow after a couple brews. It's not a good idea if you got heart issues.
Yeah, going out after a couple brewskis is a bad idea for a lot of reasons. The body has a way of conserving warmth, and one of those ways is to what we call vasoconstrict the blood vessels, where the blood vessels actually narrow on their own because the blood vessels are dynamic. They're not like pipes. They actually open and close. So the idea is to keep warm with multiple layers, multiple thin layers, as well as gloves and a hat, because a lot of heat is lost through the head and the ears. Regardless of how much hair you have on your head.
And my wife bugs me all the time because I don't want to mess my hair up. So she's like, put a hat on. I'm like, no, my hair. But then I end up freezing. You're right. Hey, Santa, how you doing? Santa Claus is outside our studio.
Well, and also I think that people are food. We talk about food and, heart attacks and cholesterol and high blood pressure. And we just watched something the other day, Frank and I. What was it called? Eat.
Oh, yeah. It was Sick, Fat, and Almost Dead.
And I bring this up.
A documentary, yeah.
Because, the people were talking about, oh, well, I'm 55 and, I've lived a decent life. And if I get another 10 or 20 years, that's all I'm worried about. And it's like this ignorant attitude that you can basically eat whatever you want. You can drink whatever you want. And if it's a heart attack's going to happen, it's going to happen anyway.
Like, yeah. If it's in the cards. I mean,
and I know a lot of it is genetic.
It is genetic, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think that, so is it true that there's a huge genetic component, but we can help to kind of alter that roadmap based on our environment, what we are taking in?
You can definitely change the route that you're taking with your health, because half of it is likely genetic, depending on your family history, but the modifiable risk factors such as diet, control of cholesterol, control of blood pressure, control of diabetes, and quitting smoking can change which fork in the road you can take. There are a lot of people that say, well, you only go around once, let's live it up. But you have to realize that a lot of people can get a heart attack that may or may not be fatal, and then you're in and out of the hospital for the rest of your days, which is really not a great way to have high quality of life.
Definitely
not. So it's imperative that people live in moderation. Low cholesterol, low fat foods can certainly be tasty, and you're really not giving up that much.
Yeah, and I want to talk to you about in one particular study I've recently read. We're talking to Dr. Philip Krause, MD cardiologist at North Shore University Health Systems. And I'm going to leave this as our cliffhanger, and we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to speak more about your heart health with Dr. Krause. Welcome back to the Bill and Wendy Show. We're in the home stretch here. Ro and Ann are coming up right after us at 3 o'clock, or well, at least after the 3 o'clock news. Right now, we're talking to Dr. Philip Krause, and we're talking about heart health. This is a really scary time of year for some who have heart issues or some that don't know about it and get out there and walk through thick snow and start shoveling. And we're talking about how food and lifestyle contributes to heart health. And, Doc, have you read this debate, and I'm sure you have, about fat versus carbohydrates when it comes to inflammation in your heart?
What? Right. There are good fats and bad fats. The polyunsaturated fats are worse for you. So foods that are high in polyunsaturated fats, trans fats especially, are the worst. So restaurants are trying to do their best to decrease trans fats in the foods that they offer. So as an as we discussed, taking things in moderation is very important. Of course, you need some amount of fat to make the brain and the heart function normally.
What about this whole theory, though, that it's no longer just fat? Like, it's not. And there's some people who believe it's not fat at all that's the culprit, and butter for years has been the enemy, and fats have been the enemy of heart disease. But in reality, what I've read, and you're an expert on this, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that it's actually the inflammation caused by certain carbohydrates and sugar that is the culprit of inflammation on a cellular level and even in the heart. Is this true?
It is. In fact, the way that it responds and elevates cholesterol in the blood is really at the helm of what's happening with inflammation. Anything that causes increase in inflammation can cause these plaques to become unstable. The interior of the artery can develop plaques early on in life. If the plaques are stable and have very little cholesterol, they can't do much harm. But once they become unstable and build with cholesterol, fat, sugars, and the other things that add to it, such as carbohydrates that you discussed, the plaques can become unstable. That's why we use medicines to treat the cholesterol, to stabilize that plaque, make sure that the blood pressure is well controlled, and make sure that people don't go out and exercise, shovel snow, without being tested first. So stress testing may be indicated for those patients with risk factors.
And diets like the paleo diet or the bulletproof diet, I don't know if you're familiar with this, where it's all predicated on heavy proteins, heavy fats, almost zero to no starchy carbohydrates, some plant-based elements in there. And people are actually reducing the risk of heart rate on it. How does that make sense at all?
It makes sense because people are decreasing the carbs in their diet, and it decreases their cholesterol and absorption, basically the way that these foods are absorbed and laid down into the vessels or the arteries of the heart. Hmm. The problem is that people go a little bit over the end, the pendulum swings the wrong way. So they say, well, I can eat any meat that I want. So they load up on bacon and sausage and things that we're very comfortable with in the Chicago area.
Yes.
Keep ourselves warm in these cold temperatures. So as I said before, it has to be things in moderation. So lean meat and fish, the Mediterranean diet is what we recommend. The fad diets are nice for a while for some people because it gives them an excuse to go have a Chicago hot dog and load it up.
Right, but, minus the bun.
But we all know. Yeah, there you go. The best diet that we could recommend is a Mediterranean diet. Lean meats, fruits, vegetables, fish, lean poultry, and high in legumes such as beans and nuts.
And how about
they're going to keep the most healthy?
And how about calories in, calories out? Are you a proponent of this, or are you a believer in the macronutrients of all things you consume?
Well, if people are trying to lose weight, then you do have to count calories. If you burn more calories than you take in, then typically weight loss will be successful. So this is what we prescribe for patients. Being on a diet is useful. It's better to be on a diet and exercise once people have been evaluated by their doctor to make sure that it's safe to exercise. And that gets us back to our original discussion that going out and shoveling is significant forms of exercise and stress.
Yeah, and Doc, we got some texts coming in with some questions for you from the 262. I would like this doctor to address some of the evidence that cholesterol is only a problem if we have the inflamed artery system that it's not written well, but that adds to the high level of issues. Does that make sense?
It does. The inflammation is a problem that causes this buildup of plaque in the arteries. There are some people that are more susceptible than others, so you can't generalize to everyone. The key is to have your cholesterol checked to see not only the total cholesterol, but what we call the subfractions, triglycerides, bad and good cholesterol. That has to be checked. So these people and your loyal listeners really should have their cholesterol checked as part of a large spanned evaluation by their physician to see what their cardiovascular risks are. Sooner the better.
Well, and Doc, a lot of times, like you mentioned, people, you know, staying away from, you know, the heavy fats and carbohydrates. Also, I recently just got tested and found a whole bunch of foods that I am intolerant to. Could eating food that you're not digesting properly or you may be allergic to, does that increase your risk of heart attack?
I don't know of any evidence of allergy-related increased risk. But anything that can cause stress and increased inflammation on your body can certainly increase your risk for developing coronary disease and a heart attack. The idea is to decrease inflammation through diet, exercise, and the appropriate medications to drop that cholesterol.
Interesting stuff. Dr. Philip Krause from the North Shore University Health System, thank you so much for joining us. Doc, how can people get a hold of you?
They can reach us through the North Shore University Health System at the Cardiovascular Institute. They can also call our office at 847-676-1333. We also have educational materials available online, as well as American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology. People should look for the warning signs. Make sure they get attention immediately if they have any chest pressure, trouble breathing, shortness of breath, radiation down the arm, nausea, or change in exercise tolerance. People need to pay attention to that, get inside immediately, and don't wait to call for help.
Thank you, Doc. Great tips before the holiday. We appreciate it, and have a good one.
Thank you.
You too. Stay safe. Enjoy your holidays.
You got it. All right, we'll be right back with Ro and Anna.